Well, first of all, many of us don't even know what a trilobite is.
I'm one of those people.
I've seen them. They lived typically between about 500 million and 200 million years ago on the Earth, and they became extinct.
Okay.
There were over 10,000 different species of trilobite, and they were a segmented animal with three lobes, a central lobe and a left and a right lobe.
Right.
They were considered like the butterflies of the sea. They were everywhere, and their sizes were from as small as a pinhead to as large as a couple of feet long. They were basically arthropods, jointed leg animals like a lobster or an insect,
right,
only much more primitive. And it's interesting because the forms on Mars, while somewhat different from terrestrial trilobites, and that's to be expected, are close enough that we can recognize them as being such. And the first sign is they have segments like a roach or an insect, and you can see the individual segments on some of them.
Oh, yeah.
And second, they have a head, in many cases, it's called the pygidium, and it is it's different shapes. Many of them are rounded, somewhat horseshoe-shaped or lozenge-shaped, but they have each a unique, and for each species, different shape of head. Many of them could roll up into a ball, just like a pill bug or a roly-poly that any kid is familiar with. And so in times of stress, that was how they would respond. Now, the bulk of the trilobites that we have found have been rolled up as if they were subjected to some sort of a shock, such as being dumped out of the water or something. And some of them are clearly simply plastered on the surface of a rock and then worn away. Hmm. And so it really depends on how familiar you are with a lot of these things, because some of them are difficult to see unless you're familiar with fossils.
No, I'm not big on trilobites, for sure. It says apparent size, 3 millimeters. Is that based on the known distance from the camera or what?
That's based on the image field. They publish the specifications for the imager on the NASA website.
Right.
And it says the field of view is so many millimeters or so many centimeters wide. And so based on the size of the image field, you make a measuring stick, and then you see how big the elements are inside it. Or you can even count pixels. We know the frame is 1,024 pixels wide.
Right.
And if something is so many pixels wide, then that dictates a certain size.
Okay. Are trilobites common in these photographs, or are they uncommon?
They're fairly common, actually, and most of them are very small. We found a couple of larger ones that would measure probably half an inch to a couple of inches in length, and the most prominent one is located on Bounce Rock. And many people have seen it and said, wow, that looks like a trilobite. Well, the interesting thing was NASA announced that Bounce Rock is an igneous rock, a volcanic rock. And so immediately they said, oh, well, then it can't be a trilobite because that's an igneous rock, and you can't make a fossil in molten lava. Well, I take issue with this, and that is we've been told that it's an igneous rock based on the readings of their instrumentation. But my theory is, and it's very simple, and it has gained support as well, Bounce Rock is not necessarily an igneous rock. There's two mechanisms that can put a fossil on that thing, very simply. Number one, the organism and the mud and the water it lived in could be splashed over an igneous rock and dry on it in the near vacuum. They could fossilize or mummify in the near vacuum.
Right.
And they would be sedimentary while the core of the rock itself would be igneous. Then when you go to grind it with a rock abrasion tool, you're taking off the sediment and you're reading the interior of the rock, which might be igneous.
Mm-hmm.
And here is the other method. The rock itself could have been numerous small particles like sand that were igneous in origin, deposited by water as a sediment, and then show up as a whole rock again. When you read the mineral content, it looks like an igneous rock. And the interesting thing about this is that after I had put this on my webpage and stated my theory about it, there's a scientist by the name of Professor Phil Christensen of Arizona State University, and he is the lead scientist for the Mini-TES, or the Thermal Emission Spectroscopy Machine that they use to look at the emissions and identify minerals.
Right.
And this article that was published in the BBC News on May 18th supported my contention, and it is, and this is a quote from it, he said, the most exciting is the basalt signature in the layered cliffs, and he's talking about Endurance Crater. And he says, basalt is volcanic in origin, but the thinness of the layers visible in the cliffs suggests that they were in place some way other than as flow of lavas. Mm. Our working hypothesis is that volcanically erupted rock was broken down into particles that were then transported and redeposited by wind or by liquid water. In other words, the igneous rock was broken down into little pieces, carried by wind or water, deposited as a sedimentary rock. And their instrument cannot tell the difference between an igneous rock or millions of little pieces of igneous rock laid down in a layer. They still read as an igneous rock. So the readings that bounce rock as igneous can be absolutely false. It's a matter of interpretation of the instruments.
What are we going to have to get on Mars, or do with respect to Mars, to just put this away and prove it one way or the other?
Well, right now they're still working on the sample return mission, and that would absolutely answer the question. If they brought back samples, they could examine them directly, and they could see if there was anything alive in it. But understand that I am still greatly concerned about the sample return, and there is actually an organization online, the International Committee Against Mars Sample Return, and they're at icamsr.org.
Oh, you're advertising them.
Well, I think that it's worth looking at. Because
are you a member?
I'm going to join them as soon as I get in the morning.
Really?
I'm going to join them in the morning.
Really? Are you really?
Yes, I am.
You feel that seriously about it?
Absolutely, because we now have found liquid water on the surface of Mars, and we know that there was life in the past, and I absolutely doubt that everything died. And I do feel that there are still live organisms on the planet. After all, we know there's liquid water there now, and you can see the pictures of the geysers on my site as well. And this is the thing. Anybody who's ever been to Yellowstone knows what a geyser or a fumarole looks like, and you can look at the images, and you can see what is very clearly a wash area. I understand you live in the desert, right?
Uh-huh.
And you've seen wash areas where it's rained and it's flashed over, and it's sorted the materials and left the wash behind. And we can see these in many of the images very clearly. We also have what appears to be ice in the bottom of Endurance Crater, and that makes perfect sense if you assume that whatever impact created Endurance Crater broke open the aquifer. The water table flooded in and froze the ice block in the bottom of the crater.
Well, Sir Charles, what do the biologists tell us about the relative danger of bringing something back from Mars? Is it more likely than not to be disagreeable to human or animal or plant life?
Well, I don't know of any case where we've introduced a strange organism where it turned out to be beneficial. I mean, that's pretty obvious logic right there. You don't just bring something strange home and then hope it plays well with others.
But you must have some reason to believe it could be catastrophic.
I feel that the risks involved are great enough that we shouldn't take the risk.
Wow.
If we want to study this hardware, if we want to study anything we bring back, if we want to study organisms from Mars, there are two ways we can do it in safety. Number one is to put a base on the moon and do it there, where it's in utter isolation. And the other is to send a biological laboratory to Mars, much like the rover, but far more advanced with the ability to work with biological materials and do some sort of an assay on them. That would be our safest method of handling this.